Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to world-class operators and we get their insights on not only how to scale up their businesses, but also how to scale up themselves, as this knowledge will help you move towards your ideal scene. And super, super stoked to have Shashant on the call today. Shashant's the COO at Clairo out here in London. Got a really interesting background. He's worked, he's a founder himself. He's also a mentor to founders and startups. And, you know, he's got some skin in the game and worked with some of the biggest financial institutions that we know, including the likes of Goldman Sachs. So, mate, super stoked to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard, for the kind introduction. I'm really psyched to be on this show.
Awesome. And today we're going to be talking about an important subject and a subject that doesn't get enough airtime. It is discussed a lot in my fintech think tank and also one-on-one with clients on a regular basis. And it's a subject about structure and organizational structure. And everyone out there, do not turn off the podcast. It is important. You need to listen to this. You're going to get a lot of value from it. We're going to enlighten you on some of the parts of the puzzle that need to be put in place that allow you to, as a founder or as an executive, to move from coping in your business to growing and expanding and having fun in your business. Okay, so we're going to unpack this today. And I think the best place to start is looking at what needs to be done in order to set up an organizational structure that helps you move through the gears and it helps you lean into an expanded company. So let's start off there and bring Shashant into the conversation. What I'd like to know from you, you know, first up, Shashant, just through your experience as a founder yourself, also obviously being a mentor and now also obviously the COO, Clairo, you know, what do you think is needed in order to initially start building out that organizational structure? What are the key steps or the key factors that you need to think through to build something that you can grow into?
Yeah, as you correctly said, it's not a topic which is picked up with enough importance, because I think traditionally it has been considered as a soft subject. Mostly people concentrate on what is a business model? What is the revenue stream going to be like? How do we get the correct technical skill set in, et cetera, et cetera? However, over a period of time, if you read literature, read research, case studies, the companies which have really focused on people as the core component of their business tend to do really well, are more sustainable, and generally is able to retain the best talent, and retaining the best talent naturally leads into a better product and a revenue proposition. So of late, I think it has been one of those things which people are very much correctly so putting a lot of importance into. The challenges which you talked about, I think it has changed quite a lot. Pre-COVID, it was a different challenge. Post-COVID, it's a different challenge. When we started Clairo, at the very beginning, it was just two or three of us trying to validate a business model and do some market research, et cetera, et cetera. Culture didn't play as an important part because it was a bunch of people just trying to assess a market model. However, when we decided, when we raised a round of funding and we decided we have to grow and we need the correct skill set and people on board, two immediate challenges. One was the environmental challenge and other is the cultural challenge. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the environmental challenge, you're in a COVID environment, you're not meeting people anymore. It's not easy to recruit people when you don't see them, et cetera. So the way we conducted the onboarding process or the recruitment process had to change, had to be fit for purpose for remote working and getting the right talent in. Mm-hmm. So that is kind of the environmental, whereas the cultural part was that the landscape is changing so much in terms of the diversity and inclusion having a balanced team, which very correctly is moving in the correct direction, because the more diverse team you have, the more diversity of ideas come in, and your product is more representative of the society which you're there to serve. So it becomes a very important proposition to have that cultural element as a challenge as well. So those are the two primary challenges which we personally face, and I'm very much sure that many companies who were at our similar stage or just at the starting point where they were did not have an organization structure and want to put an organization structure, those were the two main challenges which were there at the post-pandemic world at the time.
Then we're talking about organizing here, right? And I get it. The culture and the environment are very critical to take a look at, and always take a look at, and make certain you have the right plan and the right strategies in recruiting, et cetera, going forward. But even before we get to that phase, we are organizing stuff. We're not sort of spraying and hoping that we're going to get talent. We're going to have a structure. And I think, you know, what I like to tell my clients, you need to go through look at an organization in four manners. One is making certain you have an organizational board, and not just an executive board, but an organizational board, an organizational structure. What does that look like? You know, you have, maybe you have a founder's office, a CEO, a COO, CTO, et cetera. So what does that structure actually look like? And the next question I put out there is, so what's the flow? How is this structure, how's this system even going to be communicating to one another? What's the flow? What does that look like? Because what you want to make certain from day dot is that flow works, right? And for example, sales and marketing flow to the CTO and the dev world if required. And in each and every part of this, that structure that you just mentioned, what are the hats required, right? So if you have a hat, like a fireman has a hat, you know, we all know what a fireman's job is, right? He's going to go out there, he's going to put in his hard hat, his overall, so he doesn't get burns. He's going to go up with his hose so he can, you know, spray down the fire. What is the hat of the CTO, as an example? What does that person need to be doing? What do they need to have? And what is the outcome of that particular role? And lastly, you know, this is a lot of detail, I know, for everyone, but what are, in each and every part of this, what are the stats that drive productivity? We have to drive productivity, right? And I think it's important to think around organizing and productivity in the same breath, because, you know, you're talking about culture and also making certain that we have the environment understood. But again, it comes down to organizing, productivity, those two elements, right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. They're quite interlinked, very much interlinked, that if you have the correct organization structure and the correct ownership in place, it naturally should lead into the productivity metrics, whatever is defined for your company. Now, like, just for example, if the tech team needs to, if their metric is more about like how many Jira tickets are they completing and how many releases are we making on a weekly or a monthly basis, that is very much connected to how much is the design team flowing this information into the tech, and the product team giving the specs to the design team, and the marketing team feeding back the market research into product. So there's a chain reaction out there. And what we have personally found the most useful is having cross-functional meetings on a weekly basis really help, without necessarily putting a very strict agenda, but having a cross-functional meeting where everyone is just bringing raw insights onto the table. And when people bring raw insights onto the table, we're not necessarily expecting them to come with solutions. We're just asking them to bring the insights. Data-driven insights always is more factual in nature. And when that is brought onto the table and multifunctional team discuss that particular insight, what it leads to is naturally a solution, whether it's a product solution, a service solution, or a communication solution. So that really helps cross-functional organization. The other bit of organization structure, which we tend to pay a lot of attention on, is the diversity of ideas, which I talked to you earlier about. We have found ourselves in situations where technology team comes up with, hey, there's the problem here with technology, let's find a solution to that and immediately try put that out. However, that might not be the best solution from a customer perspective. Hence, bringing in the diverse group of people into the discussion, whether it's from the marketing team, product team, design team, or it could be just from a customer services perspective, just bring that together to have that discussion. We have a lot of value, which we can then generate. Ultimately, the productivity in some organization is the output. Yeah. We very much at Claro focus on the outcome. And there's a slight difference between output and outcome. Output is like the number of tickets we put out, number of releases we put out. Outcome is what is the value to the end customer, which we have generated from all the work which we have done. So across the organization, we try to look at the outcome and the customer value benefit which we are producing out of that. And as soon as we changed our metric from output to outcome, we naturally start seeing solutions which is coming out from all the teams across. Is where is the value driven to the customer? And naturally, if a value is driven to a customer, they would come back to give us more revenue and to do repeated business with us. So that is also another thing that we are working on very actively.
I like it. And I like what you're saying about outcome. And, you know, what you're describing there is ultimately the cycle of production. And what we need to do when we look at the cycle of production is focus on those outcomes. But in that cycle of production, I know we mentioned the customer at the end, the end point, the end. We all love our customers. We know we need to be solving their problems. But inside the company, there's also a cycle of productions that can be quite linear. So as an example, there could be a, we're talking about technology here, there could be a sales cycle of production, there could be a communication cycle of production, and everything that you go through at the end of it has a product, whether that's a marketing message, as an example, or whether that's an end product that your customers will benefit from, there's a cycle and there's an outcome, right?
Yeah, absolutely right in saying that. We should not see just what is the tech platform has come out with as the outcome. The outcome could be in so much multiple ways. It is probably the way we message to people. It's just the tone of voice which we want to change. It's the time at which we want to contact people. So quite a lot of it is operational, and the other bits could be what is evident in a product line. Given that Claro is just an app, which is the customer-facing thing, that is one of the key products which people are seeing us. But then there is our website. There is the way me as a representative of the company, how do I talk to you or how do I represent myself in public, as well as the emails that we send out to people, how does it represent? So absolutely, all of the organization bit. Now, it's easier for me to say because, you know, I work in an organization right now, which is only 30 people, and there is room for us to come together once in a while and have these strategic discussions about how do we do certain things. When the scale goes up, and I've worked in an organization which has had 10,000 people in the organization, and that becomes so much more harder. However, the reason why it becomes so much harder is because as the information starts decimating towards the larger team, the message might change a bit, the message becomes a bit more thinner, and the correct information is not. Given that we work in a time today where there is a lot of productive technologies out there, whether it's Slack, whether it's Jira, whether it's Notion, you know, any of these productive tools, I think we live in a great time where these communication gaps are on an everyday basis getting narrower and narrower, which means the communication which started at a focal point can reach the end point so much more effectively. And that, I think, is an improvement which has happened generally in the industry. And I think it's only going to get better as we go into the future.
And, you know, we talk about, obviously, ultimately flow and the outcome and the communication lines. But it also sounds, and I think it also sounds like you guys in general, there's a need to have, you know, you can't just communicate and flow randomly. There needs to be organization. And in that organization, you need to, I mean, I refer to it as hats, other people refer to it as positions, roles, whatever it is, whatever you refer to it as, you need to have people in place at a terminal to take it up, understand exactly what their role is in the cycle of production. So how do you guys make certain that there's a specific, every individual in your business has a very good understanding of their hat or their role, and they fulfill that, or they actually don't fulfill it, they exceed it during that cycle of production?
Yeah. So there are a couple of answers to that. One is we use the OKR model similar to like the Google's use to talk to each person in the company to make sure their objective and key results are quite defined, at least on a 6-monthly basis. So we sit down with them and say, this is the technical expectation from your role to deliver. On the other end of the scale, a different dimension, whenever we come up with a new project or a new initiative, we always use Rocky metrics to make sure that there is someone who's owning this particular task and someone who's accountable, someone who's responsible, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So the classic Rocky model, which works perfectly fine, and I think it's still very much applicable in today's time and world. And I'll give you a very easy example. Diversity and inclusion is something which from day one, which we were very, very focused on from a cultural perspective that we want to build into the organization structure. And it's easier said than done because it takes a lot of active effort from each one of the people in the company to represent themselves and attract the right type of diversity into the company. So initially we played around with the bits of bobs, we write some policies, we do this. It kind of worked sometime, it didn't work sometime, till the point where we allocated one single person who was extremely passionate about diversity and inclusion as the owner of this particular stream. And this particular owner was responsible to be included in most of the hiring that we conduct after that particular point, which meant they would always bring an angle of diversity and inclusion. Their responsibility was to make sure that when we are having the first round of interview with someone, there's enough diversity on the table for the person, the candidate, to see that, okay, this is a diverse group of people, so I can continue my conversation and be comfortable in this organization. Mm. Similarly, as we go along the recruitment chain, making sure that this particular person is given the correct attention and correct priority to be considered for that particular role. So the day when we decided where we're going to have an owner, specific owner for diversity and inclusion, things start changing and things start turning around quite a lot positively, to the point where now we sit at a point where our male to female ratio is 45-55%.
And that's brilliant, right? Especially in fintech. Awesome. I love it.
We initially set ourselves a target of 30-70. If we could achieve 30-70, we would be happy. But we are so happy right now. And that change happened only after, as you correctly mentioned, putting an owner in place who was responsible for being there and take the right decisions or include their opinion into the decision. So I think you're absolutely right. OKR from an individual perspective, but whenever there is an initiative, we always have a Rocky and an owner for that particular stream.
Yeah, I like it. What I like to tell my clients when they're looking at getting talent into an organization or starting a new initiative, you know, RACI is one, and I like it. It is technical, it gives ownership around something. But the other is what you refer to here. In some instances, it's being able to make certain you know what type of person is required in the role. So the beingness, they need to be passionate, you know, need to be passionate about something in order to, you know, want to do it. I mean, you're in this instance, diversity and inclusion. So what else, if you're a developer or whatever, you need to be curious, you need to be thoughtful, empathetic. These are the things that actually embody your culture. Because lots of times we all talk about culture, but actually, we're not putting culture into the job spec, right? So we go technical skills. Oh, we forgot about culture. Oh, well, yeah, okay. And then the doingness is obviously the tech, right? So in this instance, you mentioned being making certain they are resilient. You need to do your job correctly. You need to be able to write code or whatever it is, run a project plan. And then the outcome, the happiness, as I like to call it, is ultimately the outcome, having a great candidate that sits in on your projects and can really gel the team together. And it's just, it's like bringing in Virgil van Dijk back into the back four of Liverpool. They're just there, they work because they know how it works, right? Yeah. And if we take a look at the beingness, the doingness, and the havingness, I think that's a very good way to also look at making certain you have that cultural fit when you are not only internally promoting, but externally bringing in.
Yes. One of the key things there, just expanding on your point, is the culture of the team is not something which one person can define. It's the team which builds. It's the tribe which actually comes together with a culture. And it's the team's responsibility in general to make sure that the culture is maintained. Now, how do we at Claro try and maintain that? It's really hard. I'm not saying we have been totally successful at it. At times we have failed, but this is how we try it. Every time we bring a new person in, whether it's on a contract temporary role or whether it's an internship role or whether it's a permanent role, there is one element of the recruitment process, which is meet your team. So it goes through all the technical rounds and HR, et cetera, et cetera. And then there is a meet the team round. And if you look at it from a productivity, it's a lot of waste of time. Because you're bringing an entire team for 1 hour. So if it's a five-person team, that's like 5 man-hours lost. However, the reason why we do it is because we want the team to make the choice that this person coming in, does he fit our culture, our tribe? Does he have the same ethos, et cetera, et cetera? Does he have a good working dynamic? Is his communication good enough for us to work with him? The loss of 5 man-hours then, you know, we take it as a hit because that converts into a lot of productive time into the future. So that whenever we run a sprint, whenever we are having a brainstorming discussion, whenever we look at the retention of the people, it's much more easier to do that. Plus, on the other end, we transfer the pressure from the executive shoulder to the team itself. You know, you decide who do you want to work with tomorrow. Sometimes the process takes a bit more longer than usual. Sometimes we have to give up candidates who are kind of good for the role, but not a good team fit. But at the end, result is that the team which comes in is really passionate about working for each other and driving as a team rather than driving as heroes or individuals. So that really helped us quite a lot.
Yeah, this is, I love it. I absolutely love it. And you took sort of the words out of my mouth. This is, I know a number of businesses do this. And actually, they do it in a way that, just as you say, you empower your team to create that team, right? Because, you know, day in, day out, maybe you're not always going to be talking to the CEO or the COO, or, you know, you maybe not talk to the executive team, but you will be talking to Janet or Mario next year, right? And you guys are going to be in the trenches. So you may as well get along and have a bit of fun, right? And be passionate about what you do. And I love it because that's, again, that's around being. You have to be passionate. Yeah, as a team, you have to be gelled together to achieve whatever mission they're to achieve. And to take that one step further, I mean, we can bring in analogies here. I mean, and I think it is interesting. If you look at the sort of, I talk about football a lot in Liverpool because they've recently won something, which is like, wow. It's interesting because you look at those teams, you look at Klopp now compared to Benitez, compared to maybe Graham Souness, etc. And how he manages and how he has instilled that team effort and that team workmanship into the way that Liverpool plays now, as opposed to what they used to play like. And no doubt in my mind that it is very much a team effort, right? There's no one single individual, to your point. There's no superhero there. Yes, Salah scores 50 goals a season, but, you know, Van Dijk and Alisson at the back, you know, save 50 goals a season, right? So the more founders, executives, et cetera, can trust and empower their teams to make those calls, the better chances you're going to have to reach whatever milestones you want to reach.
Yeah. And the discussion which we had earlier on output versus outcome.
Yeah.
You know, a team would always look at the outcome.
Yeah.
And if you look at individuals, they would look at the output. So we want to change the metric actively away from output to outcome. Like, as a team, what can we deliver? One of the other things which we did, especially during the COVID time when we were totally in a lockdown situation, which really helped, was the Friday afternoon team meetings, which we would have on every week on a Friday afternoon. We would book out 1 hour and we would go into that meeting without any agenda. And this was trying to replicate the coffee chats which you usually have, or the water cooler chats which you have in office. Given that we were not able to meet anyone who we had recruited to come into the company, and during like the 3 or 4 hours of the recruitment process, it's really hard to get an understanding of you as a person. You know, what's your family? You know, where have you traveled? What are your hobbies and things like that? So we deliberately put this 1 hour of inefficiency in. Now, in multiple articles, you would read, like, this is the most inefficient way to use your office hours, because that with 27 people, it's 27 man hours lost. It's almost a week of man hours lost. But what we found out is during that 1 hour, because people were sharing a lot of their personal stuff, one person has a brewery in his garage. You know, that's a topic of discussion. We discussed for almost half an hour. How did he do it, et cetera, et cetera. One of the person is a ballet dancer. You know, that's another discussion which we had. Like, it gives you insight into the team. It opens up the team a bit. When you show your true self, you come with your true self to work, naturally your discussions during a sprint meeting, discussions during a brainstorming session is that much more open. And we found that to be an extremely effective way, especially the cross-functional meetings that we had. People knew each other much more, were easy in communicating, they know who the other person is. So that also was a way introducing redundancy to have more productivity as an outcome on the other end.
Yeah, and I like to call that. I mean, productivity is important and moving things forward is important, but so too is authenticity. Because if you're authentic, just as you guys clearly are, you're going to build that team, you're going to build that culture. Whereas if you're synthetic and sort of put the foot down and the pedal down all the time, I don't know what's going to happen, but I feel like it's not going to be a great journey or a great story, right? And as you've mentioned outcomes, you've mentioned metrics, you've also mentioned weekly meetings. But what, to get down into the detail, what on a weekly basis, what type of stats are you guys gathering and looking at that allows you to sort of see whether you are expanding or contracting? Because this is also part of organizing, right? If you have an organizational structure, the data should flow, should give senior management that data, and you guys need to take action.
Yeah, it's a very relevant question you asked, because we very recently went through the process of defining what we call as our North Star metric.
Yeah.
For most of your listeners, they must have probably already heard about it. If not, then just Google it, North Star metric.
Yeah.
It's an extremely effective framework to define the focus for an entire company, that what is the direction, or what is that one single metric that you define as a company, and everyone is focused towards achieving that or improving that as we go along. And that is one thing that we look at on a weekly basis. For us personally, Claro, given that we are in a financial industry which provides financial guidance to people, our North Star metric is more defined around the weekly active goals, which people come onto the platform and achieve. However, that changes from company to company. Like for Spotify, it's something like time spent listening. For Facebook, correctly, so it's monthly active users. So depending on your type of company, the North Star metric would change. So we as a company have defined a North Star metric, and those North Star metric then is broken down into OMTMs. That is the one metric, the most important metric which you have for your company. So what we do is, like, for example, each department, the marketing team is building campaigns which would be based on their individual metric, but ultimately the outcome has to reflect into the North Star metric. Similarly, the product team, when they're defining the product strategy, it has to end in a journey which defines the North Star metric. So that's how we organize it internally, and that has been highly effective, because when we are in a bigger team meeting, we don't look at individual metrics. We look at this one big number at the very top, and that defines if it's going in the upward direction, we know that we are expanding. The scale of expansion is also defined by the scale of the metric going up or down. Similarly, if it is contracting, we know something which we did hasn't worked. And that allows us to then look at like what are the changes which we made over the last week, last month, in each of the specific segments of marketing, product, technology, et cetera, and then boil it down. So that framework has really helped us move in the right direction. We are yet to see a massive productivity benefit out of it because we only implemented that about a month ago. And I think we would have to leave it for about 3 months at least to see the individual productivity go up or the company productivity to go up. But I think as an indicator itself, it's a very significant and good indicator for us to work on.
And I like it because what we're doing here is you running on a weekly basis, and weekly is minimal, i.e. it should be done weekly, monthly, quarterly. Yeah, that's what you sort of longer term, right? So you can act quickly. And I think everyone that wants to be running stats or metrics, run them on a daily, if not weekly basis. I know daily is pretty hardcore, but you know, you should be gathering stuff on a daily basis anyway. But look at them on a weekly basis, because then you can take action. You can course correct, right? Just like, like you said, you can assign conditions, emergency condition for a certain department, and you can dive in and help them out. And you know, when you are, let's say something's contracting, something's not exactly working in the condition, an emergency condition is assigned. I always like to tell my clients that you need to make certain that you come up with a quick scale up process for that emergency and sort it out. And then once sorted out, it might take a couple of iterations because you know you never get to, potentially won't get stuff right in the first time. But once it's sorted out, you then document exactly what the new solution is, and then you run that process again. I don't know if you guys do something similar, but it will get interesting to get your insights.
Yeah. So given that we started the company only like 2 years ago, we had the advantage of having all of these analytics tools which are available in the market to use. And most of these tools do give new companies like free credits to use initially and then check. Yeah. It's kind of a marketing gimmick from their perspective, but it really benefits smaller companies at the very beginning. You don't have to pay for a lot of these services. Yeah. So we specifically use, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say product names, but I'm just going to say
it's good. It's good, man. You go for it. Because what we want to do here is we want to help folk reach out and you know scale up their stats in this instance. So go for it.
Yes. So we use AppsFlyer, which is connected within the mobile app to track all like the analytics and the usage of the platform, as well as we use Mixpanel, which is like a dashboard tool which allows you to visualize all of this data, and then we can put all of these conditions in place. I want to see it in this dimension or that dimension. And having that one single dashboard which everyone in the company has access to, all the way from the designer to person who's writing the content to the person who's writing the technology, and it's a constant, and it's one of those things which is as transparent as it can get. And it's a reality. It's a truth of the matter. Yeah. You should not wait for your CEO or a CEO to tell you what is the metrics. It's the truth, which is always there in front of your eyes. And are we improving or not improving? So that's one of the fundamental things which we, again, it's one of those very proactive things which we said we have to do from day one. We can't wait for positive revenue, positive profit. We can't wait for that. You can't build a culture at a later time. You have to start building the culture on day one. You bring all of those. Yes, it takes extra effort. It's loss of productivity channeling towards building the product. But what it does is it creates a framework that when you scale up from 2% to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 30, and 30 to 300, you already have the culture, the setup in there. So I think that is how we look at it. And we look at it on a weekly basis. Week on week, we have an insights board, which is a representative from each of the departments coming in. And we sit down and we just look at the graphs. We look at the graphs and we say, what is the insights that we can derive? Can it be done in a more efficient manner? I think yes. Absolutely. We can come to the meeting with the insights. But right now we are at a stage where, because we're quite early in our journey, we come together and then we look at the numbers and say, these are the insights derived. Now let's engage in a conversation. How do we make it better? So that effectively works very well for us.
Brilliant. And, you know, I think you just summed up the conversation pretty well there. And being able to, as a team, even if you're small, being able to organize yourself and move from just coping and coping on a daily basis to really growing and expanding, you need to put in these structures that allow you to grow and expand. Growth and expansion obviously comes from the more clients and the more customers you get on board, but also it's very important to have, as you just discussed, the organizational elements in place. So, you know, I think to round it up, there's the org board, the communication lines, there's the hats, the roles, and then obviously there's the stats and the meetings that take place on a week in, week out basis to make certain productivity is moving forward. And if it's not moving forward, there's a course correct action that allows the teams to move forward. And I think that's a pretty powerful antidote to take away and to action. If you are out there, go away and think about it and reach in if you've got any questions. And before we now we move on to the next round of the show, which is always a fun round. And guests look at me and go, oh my God, what's he going to ask me now? But it's a fun round. It's called the flash round. And the flash round, Shashant, is I ask you three questions and you get the chance to put me in the hot seat or the scaling seat, and you can ask me one question.
Add one more point before we move on.
Sure.
Which I think is quite an important thing, which given I worked in several big firms and smaller firms, one of the things which we very actively decided to introduce is a culture of opening up conflicts, healthy conflicts in a discussion. Because what tends to happen is it's very easy for everyone to start saying yes and yes and yes. And the first person who talks then takes away the argument in a certain direction. So my job, especially actively when I'm organizing a meeting or in a bigger group of discussion, I very much try to play the devil's advocate to introduce conflict into the situation, which then forces people to think outside just saying yes. And that, I think, brings us so much more value. Now, when we talk about productivity, it seems to be one of those things which is anti-productive to introduce conflict. However, the output may reduce, but the outcome is so much more effective at the time when the conflict has been discussed and resolved. So, sorry, I just wanted to put that.
No, brilliant points. Brilliant points. I think, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, right? Having good conflict is always an antidote to coming up with a great solution, right? Yeah. So definitely a big takeaway out of this. And saying yes is the easy course, but thinking outside the box and really pushing the buttons, so to say, gets people to maybe think of something slightly differently, a shift in mindset even, right? Because what you're saying is conflict is also, you know, you're trying to shift people's mindset away from the norm to something incredible, something that is potentially transformational.
Yes, absolutely. No. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to put that in.
No, listen, mate, brilliant. And now to the flash round, which everyone's very keen to participate in, I'd say. So, here we go. Three for you, one for me. I'm going to go first. And I know you've worked in the corporate and startup world. So I'll go easy with you first. And startup or corporate for you?
Startup, any day.
Okay. What are the three skills you think that are needed to build a business?
Aspiration, influencing skills, and the hunger carry on when the odds are totally against you.
Yeah, brilliant. Some resilience at the back there. And then what is a fun fact about you that nobody else knows except for maybe your mom, dad, or your wife? There you go. Bit of authenticity here, mate.
Yes. Fun fact. Well, I'm not sure how fun it is for the audience, but I love cooking. And every time I cook, My wife especially says that if I cook the same dish twice, it never tastes the same. So I never follow a specific recipe or something. I go with the flow on what I have on hand. And if I make the same dish twice, it never, ever tastes the same. But so far, it has not killed anyone. And I'm really happy about it.
So yeah, it's good that your wife continued to say it. I was going to say, well, your wife is a living testament that you are a great cook, and obviously you make very scrumptious food. So awesome one. So over to you now. Do you have any questions that you would like to ask me? Or any question?
Yes, I do have. Like, I've seen you often wearing this baseball cap. Is that baseball cap?
Yeah.
How many of those do you have?
How many baseball caps do I have? I've got two, believe it or not. And they one is from the Football World Cup that was held in my native South Africa in 2008 or 2010, something around there. So yeah, it was a Bafana Bafana cap. Bafana Bafana, for folk out there that aren't South African, is boys, boys in Zulu. So that's when I was out there supporting the Bafana Bafana on their route to, I think we won a couple of matches there, which is good fun, right? And the other one is that I'm wearing now. It is for my, I went out to Japan a couple of years ago for, again, I'm a bit of a sports nut. I went out to Japan for the Rugby World Cup final. I bumped into a couple of old school friends. One, obviously a good rugby player in Brian Abana. And we obviously got rugby caps while we were out there. And the good thing about that trip was South Africa came away with the World Cup. So
yes,
it all ended in a good tale. So yeah, I've got two that I wear a lot. So I might need to get more now that you mentioned that.
Suits you well.
Awesome, man. Okay, listen, awesome having you on the show today. I really enjoyed the conversation. And if anyone wants to reach out to you or contact you you guys and the guys and the team at Clara, how can they get in touch?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm quite active there. Given that we're always hiring new people, I'm quite active. So you can find me. You type in Sushant, then Claro. I'm going to be the first one who comes up. And any questions with regards to Claro, the product itself, you can just email me at sushant@claro.team.
Brilliant. And folk, reach out to Sushant if you want. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast channel, the FinTech Scaling Show, do so now and do so today. Go to www.scaleupconsulting.com/media and you can sign up and get this interview and other interviews from really well-respected and fantastic operators around the globe right now. And look forward to you tuning into the next session and next episode. So that's all for today, and speak to you soon.
Thank you.